Good morning. So this conversation, if you just tuned in around 9 o'clock, you've got Babs Rolls Ivy, Love Babs, Love Talk. And I've been chasing Zelda for, I don't know what, 2 years?
Yeah.
two years about this project. And she was not ready to talk about it back in the day, 2 years ago. And I was like, okay, girl, when you are ready, I want to know about this project. So we've been trying to schedule some time, and we couldn't. So, voila, here she is.
Here we are. We're ready. Yes. I think I texted you. I'm ready. The time has come.
I was trying to find your bio because I printed it, but it, for some reason, not in my handbag. So I'm a little disturbed by that because I'm usually. But anyway, so I met Zelda Rowland at a dinner party some years ago. Well, not some years ago, like 2 years ago. Claudia Rankine and her husband John Lucas threw a dinner party, and you were one of the guests.
That's right.
With your guy. And so that's how I got to Sammy. How's he doing? How's his business?
Good. He's good.
Okay.
Hi, Sammy.
So Zelda Rowland is a Yale alumna. She has a BA in 2008. And you got your PhD in 16.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you look like a baby. who conceived of and created YPEI after working with students enrolled in Wesleyan Center for Prison Education at Cheshire Correctional Institution. She coordinates YPEI's partnership with the Connecticut Department of Corrections and its facilities. Relationships with other national and statewide prison education programs and criminal justice organization. She is passionate and she is passionate and gathers a broad assembly of Yale students, faculty, administration, staff, and alumni who believe that YPEI represents the best of Yale's values and the visions for the future. And what does YPEI stand for?
The Yale Prison Education Initiative.
Yes.
And we're based at Dwight Hall, which is Yale's Center for Public Service and Social Justice.
Yes. And James?
Yes.
Jetter,
yes,
is the Toe Foundation Fellow at the Yale Prison Education Initiative at Dwight Hall, where he supports efforts to bring access to Yale college courses to incarcerated students in Connecticut. He is also a Criminal Justice Fellow at Propel Capital, partner at Blue Ribbon Strategies, co-head organizer of Unlock the Vote, and a student at Trinity College. You are busy.
A little bit.
James is a New Haven native and an alum of the Wesleyan Center for Prison Education at Cheshire Correctional Institution, where he spent nearly 20 years incarcerated. You look very young, too. Where did you go when you was 12? With Wesleyan. With Wesleyan, he completed 20 credited college courses and was a member of the Lifers Program, where he worked with at-risk youth, helped raise money for local food banks, and worked with the Hartford Police Chief to address gun violence in Hartford. So upon release, James has worked as a policy analyst at the Hartford Community Loan Fund, working on state and federal policy around banking and housing. In the time since his release, he has served on the board of Wesleyan Center for Prison Education, has been honored with 100 Men of Color distinction, led participatory budgeting with Hartford City Council, and has returned to Cheshire Correctional Institution to speak to residents of its true unit. He is currently co-facilitating a workshop called Dreams Worth More Than Money at our Piece of the Pie for 18 to 24-year-old young adults who have had contact with the legal system. James is dedicated to the cause of prison education, has sought opportunities to apply his own experience to benefit those still incarcerated or returning home. Welcome.
Welcome.
This is a big deal. This is a different slant to criminal justice. This is taking the educational center... the system right to incarcerated folks,
mm-hmm.
which right. I'm sure has its own controversial fight back.
Yes and no. I mean, it's honestly, right now, it's a fairly bipartisan issue.
Uh-huh.
People recognize that enough people have been locked up, that there's a lot of reform needed, and you know, a lot of the reforms I think you'll find are bipartisan. But higher education, you know, we should be giving access to higher education to people who are at that level who deserve it. We should be providing regular educational opportunity. The word Yale does, you know, add a whole other level, that we are asserting that there are Yale students in prison, that there are people.
Are there?
We believe that there are.
And really?
We're giving Yale.
Is that true, James?
Yeah.
Oh.
We believe that enough people have been locked up that you will find students who are as academically rigorous, as omnivorous and ambitious and talented intellectually and academically as students on this campus. And that's how this program got started, is because, you know, a lot of Yale faculty and graduate students, including myself, were teaching in prisons and, you know.
So why were you teaching in prisons? Like, what led you to think of this? Because you could be anywhere.
So I started just by volunteering at the Wesleyan Center for Prison Education, which offers. Why? Mm-hmm. It was a, you know, I'd heard about it. I'd been intrigued by it. I'd heard about the Barred Prison Initiative in New York State. And I had a friend running their program who needed extra tutors that particular the semester and asked me if I would do it. And it was really a fluke. And I walked in, and those students from the very first class I had with them were the best and brightest students I'd ever encountered. And I'd been teaching at that point on campus at Yale for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew a lot of Yale students. I worked with a lot of Yale students. And I thought, wow, these are truly, this is the best classroom I've ever sat in. And I'd been, you know, a Yale student many times over myself. And I knew a lot of, you know, I'd been in many Yale classrooms on both sides of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And so meeting those students connected me with a lot of people who were already involved in this, who were teaching or participating in prison education programs around the country, and particularly with the Barred Prison Initiative, which they do barred college degrees in six different prisons in New York State. Those are barred AA and BA degrees. Students graduate and they're alumni of Bard College. They have, you know, a 2% recidivism rate for all of their students who get out. It's a rigorous, large program. And I saw that and I thought, why can't we do something like that at Yale? Well, they told me at the time, you'll never do it at Yale. It's just too much of an institution. It's too hard. It's too big. You'll never convince a place like Yale to do this. And so that's why, you know, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when we were first working on this, when James got out, a little bit afterwards, he came and worked with me. We weren't ready for him to come on this radio show. But now that we've had two summers of offering Yale-credited courses, and we know that they work, every teacher, every faculty member, we have graduate students and faculty members going in to teach. Every one of them who's come in has said, this is A, the most powerful teaching experience I've ever had, and B, these are the best students, you know, I could imagine working with. They, for you know, a million reasons, but these students do the work, which is, you know, every college professor's dream. You know, you have a classroom of students who are prepared and ready to go, and that's rarer.
They're
and rarer.
Eager, and they want it.
And they are the best defenders of the value of what we do at Yale, which is the liberal arts, right? Mm-hmm. Why is it important to not just bring access to vocational education, which is important, but not just vocational education to people in prisons, but to acknowledge that there's a range of people in, you know, there's not just, you know, there we have students who are linguists, who are sociologists, who want to be philosophers, and we allow access to that range of disciplines on campus at Yale. We believe that the best and the brightest should have access to liberal arts degrees. Why is it that people in prisons should only be trained for vocational careers?
I agree. Oh, I so agree with you. So, James, how did you get caught up in this? Like, what led you to think that this was an opportunity that needed to be elevated and shared? What is your experience to this? Cause you're from New Haven.
I'm from New Haven.
Wait, what neighborhood are you from?
I'm from the Kensington Square neighborhood.
Okay.
And I was incarcerated at the age of 17, and you know I did 19 and a half years.
That's a long time at 17.
Yeah. During that time, you know, but prior to that, you know, my mother is first generation college. Has her MSW.
Your mother?
Yeah.
Okay.
My sister was already in school when I was incarcerated. So college to me was always the next step. Mm-hmm. Even if I hadn't figured out what that meant, it was the trajectory of my household.
Okay. You saw it.
So I saw it. Yeah. And so, you know, I was very fortunate enough, like during my incarceration, that, you know, my sister and my mother and my grandmothers, they made sure that whatever my mind was, whatever inquisitive thoughts I had, mm-hmm. whatever I wanted to research or read, they provided for me.
So you're 17 and you have good role models at home, yeah. and you still find yourself caught out there.
Yeah.
Because that's being 17, that's being a black man, that's being
all of it. It's okay. all of it. Like, I mean, you know, your engagement is so, at that time, my engagement was very diverse, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't also really oppressive on mm-hmm. thought processes. And
okay.
how I was thinking. So, you know, you to say that, I've heard this from judges, like, you know, your home was a better home than
most that I see come through here.
But I don't think that's the
not it.
That's not it. There's so much more that impedes and impacts mm-hmm. the way your thought process are developing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, also all my male figures were in the streets.
Okay.
So you know, that's the path I went at that age.
Okay.
And you know, it was detrimental to myself and many people in New Haven.
All over this country.
All over this country. But, yeah. you know, when I talk about the impact of my actions, I look at okay. the city. So, being incarcerated was a different type of thing for me that I wanted to understand. Wanted to understand my actions, wanted to understand what led me in these directions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one thing that prison does provide you with is time in a cell. And so, you know, just from the jump, you know, my mother was very on me about making sure that, you know.
So even though you're there, make your time count.
Make it count. Like, yeah. you know, don't, please make it count. So, mm-hmm. you know, just thinking through a lot of stuff that was going on, you know, this wasn't an opportunity for me. And at first, it was just more of reading and conversations and autodidactic learning, just whatever I can take in.
And that started to change you? Did you feel like it was changing you, or do you feel like it was opening up the seed that had already been planted?
Yeah, you know, it was more of an isolation moment where I was able to have room to
okay.
to kind of think through
without
things.
Distraction.
Yeah, and it wasn't immediate. No, not, I mean, so it wasn't immediate. You know, at 17, going into prison, I had never been in prison. I just wanted to understand what this thing was
mm-hmm.
that was now, you know,
a part of.
I was a part of, and was, you know, my entire surroundings and life at that time. And it wasn't until like I say my early 20s when I really started to be able to think through mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, what had happened. How I got to this space, and what do I do here, and how do I contribute? And, you know, as my thoughts started driving my actions on that, then doors started opening in a very unique way. I'm not going to say because at one point, now I was in Cheshire, which is a very locked down facility, and you don't have much access. Yet I was fortunate enough to have like the most access in the whole entire prison.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Favor.
Really?
Favor. I there's nothing else to put it to. You know, it's just favor. Everything seemed to happen at kind of once. Dottie Green, who's a New Haven native.
I know Dottie Green.
Dottie was the principal. I signed up for a business ed class.
She knew you.
She knew of me mm-hmm. from the same neighborhood. And she just was keen on me and kept me in the school system.
Okay.
So then, you know, a friend of mine was taking prep classes, these little writing workshops from a Yale undergrad at the time. This is like 2004, 2005.
Wow.
And he signed me up. And so I started taking these writing workshops with Sarah Stillman. And that was like the first initial college experience that I had. and that was in Cheshire. And then she graduated and went on to really, really dope things. And
can you get a little closer to the pool?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then Wesleyan came in, and you know, Daddy was like, "Well, Wesleyan's coming in. I'm signing you up." So I was in the Wesleyan prep classes, and out of those prep classes, the program, the Center for Education program, actually developed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was involved from the origins of the program, and it was a really great experience to be able to meet the challenges that, you know, my mother definitely thought I could meet. She was like, you know.
Well, mothers, know. That's the goodness of mothers.
To an extent, I have a very real mother. Like, if it ain't you, she tell me, nah, that ain't you. That ain't for you, baby. That ain't you. Like,
yeah. So,
but extremely supportive. But, you know, it was validating. And it allowed me to be as inquisitive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed me to be as antagonistic as I naturally am.
Okay.
To even reject what I'm learning. And that's something I had to learn in itself, is that I don't have to accept everything that's here.
Welcome to college.
Yeah. you know, and during that time, Zelda started coming in, and I thought it was a great fit that Wesley had this program.
Mm-hmm.
These Yale alum and Yale current PhD students were involved. I thought that this was like the perfect match. This is so dope. And then it became completely Wesleyan. And when it came that I realized that Zelda wasn't coming back, me and a couple of guys were like, "You need to go start your own program."
That's what they said to you, yeah. Zelda?
I mean, that's what, yeah. We
were
had
you
many
thinking that you were
going
to start? I mean, you weren't thinking this, though, were you? I mean, you were just like, "I'm a volunteer, and then I'm going to go do whatever it is I do."
I mean, so the guys in the Wesleyan program who, you know, I grew close with, and I really was invested in their success, they kept saying, "We need a Yale program here. We need this to happen. You need to make this happen. This is just one prison. There are a lot of prisons in Connecticut. There's nothing else like what we have here at Wesleyan. You know, you need to start a Yale program." And I had taught through a program at Yale previously that offers Yale college credits to non-matriculated, non-degree students. So that I sort of eyed as, well, maybe we could pilot it through this program. The catch was, you know, raising the money. Mm-hmm. To Yale doesn't put any money into this program yet. But we had to raise the money to make it, you know, totally revenue neutral. The one thing I'll say, you know, that's controversial. People say, "Oh, you people in prison are getting a free Yale education." Well,
that's what I want to know about the pushback.
Right. Well, they're not getting a free Yale education. Someone's paying for it. It's just not those students. We've raised the money from people
that's
who
a good
are
point.
Paying for it, you know, and they've paid for it specifically for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll also add, these programs are rather competitive. You know, when we put up flyers in the prison for our first English class, McDougal Walker is I think the largest prison in the Northeast, 1,500-ish people there. We had 600 people asked to
Whoa.
Be considered for admission to a 12-person seminar. So that just
really
demonstrates to you the,
oh my goodness.
The need, the profound need and the desire. And what's more is when I first went to our former commissioner of corrections,
Scott
Semple,
mm-hmm.
With this idea of, I don't know, four and a half years ago, you know, I was just a PhD student. I was a volunteer, and I thought, you know, I want to try this program. I sat down with him. Hope Metcalf at the Shell Center at the law school here at Yale had set up a meeting, and you know, I had a proposal for him. This is what Wesleyan does. This is what Bard. This is what we think we could really have. And he just stopped me, and he said, "You know, I've been waiting for someone from Yale to come to me with this, and I will do whatever it takes."
Wow, that sounds just like him.
Yeah, he was amazing. So he really saw us through, you know, the dark years. So to answer your first question, I really thought, this is a great idea. Somebody should do this. I'm gonna take this to Yale, and
I'm gonna deliver it to somebody, and somebody's gonna work this out.
Right. Here's this beautiful package I've set up. Here's how you do it. Here's, you know, this is, you know, X, Y, Z. This is the mechanism. This is how you grant credit. You know, you're welcome. And it became very quickly obvious that it was just a ton of work, that nobody else at Yale was willing to really carry that burden on their shoulders. And I met with Peter Crumlish, who's the executive director at Dwight Hall. I sat down with him. I was finishing my PhD and I was kind of looking at jobs elsewhere. And he wanted to know about what, you know, what is this thing that you're trying to do? And I talked to him about it and he's like, well, this is what we thought we could do. And this is why it didn't work out this year. I mean, this was also a 4 month time from, you know, we were trying to pull it off for summer 2015, mm-hmm. I think it might have been. And that didn't work. And Peter said, well, what do we have to do to keep you around working on this? And he raised the money to really just say, keep developing this. Because if you leave, this will never happen to you. And so
that's a lot of pressure for you. Because now you have to shift your thinking about what it is you were going to go do.
Yeah.
A little bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I... You know, it's something I really mm-hmm. believed in and I felt 100% committed to. And you know, I felt that people deserve. And also, I do think, you know, I went to Yale. I have a complicated relationship with Yale. I worked for Yale.
I don't know anybody who doesn't have a complicated relationship.
I love Yale. I think Yale, you know, deserves to have this opportunity to be the best version of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is in line with Yale's mission statement to find, you know, leaders of great potential from all over the world and to train them and to cultivate them as, you know, citizens and to, I think this is in line with everything that's great about Yale. So mm-hmm. I get people, James and I, every day, we get undergraduates, faculty, graduate students, alumni, staff, like maintenance staff at Yale who call us, who come into our office and who say, this is amazing. Like, this is the best thing. Mm-hmm. How do I get involved? How do I participate? And I really can't explain. It's all over.
And so how many people are y'all working with right now? And is it a combination of men and women or is it just men at the moment?
Our students are just men.
Okay.
In total, I should have come with these numbers, but in total, we've had a few over 30 ish students mm-hmm. who have earned at least one Yale College credit.
And what do they do with these credits? Like, what do they transfer them somewhere? What happens to them?
They can transfer. They're transferable. They can transfer them anywhere.
Okay.
They're on Yale transcripts. They look just like mine. So if they get released, those credits transfer anywhere. And what's kind of unique about Yale, although this isn't entirely relevant, but you need 36 credits to graduate from mm-hmm. Yale, mm-hmm. which is, it's a weird system. So when they transfer, they turn into four. They're four typical college credits. It's a four credit class. Uh-huh. Each class is a four credit class.
Okay.
Is what it means. Although we did offer intensive Latin, which was 1.5 Yale credits. So we've offered sociology, Latin, philosophy,
and they just take them.
Art.
Like people just say, you know what? I don't know anything about that, but I'm a.
Well, they've been intro level courses. They're courses that we offer at the intro level through this program, Yale Summer Session, over the summers at Yale, and that's how we've debuted them. So they can transfer them anywhere, and really any place will take them.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think we have, you know, we have other very long-term ambitions, but right now we're offering, and those credits, I mean, I can't emphasize enough, they do a lot for
people.
Oh,
I can imagine.
You know, you have, it's not just the credits, it's the social networks,
mm-hmm.
it's James and me, you know, and what we can do for students getting out and connecting them. It's the letters of recommendation from professors when students get out applying for a job.
So what are you doing, James? Like, cause you're at Trinity now.
I'm at Trinity
working on.
I'm designing my own degree at Trinity.
And what does that look like?
Quantitative and qualitative storytelling around oppressed and marginalized populations.
So that sounds like a PhD program.
I don't know.
That sounds like you're marching toward. Does it, Zelda? It marches. Sounds like it's marching toward a dissertation of some sort.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, it.
James does everything. Wait, tell them about what you were doing yesterday.
Oh, yesterday we took out four students from ethnicity, race, and migration studies to canvas East Rock neighborhood around voter restoration for disenfranchised Connecticut citizens. So
that's another PhD. You know that, right?
That's a full citizens coalition to unlock the vote that I'm a part of. Just,
I mean, you could just write on that alone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's impactful. But
what is your dream? What is the dream?
To heal what's broken,
mm-hmm.
you know, and dismantle the system.
Okay.
I think those two are aligned.
I mean, do you think if you had this kind of educational support prior to, because I'm just trying to think of how we break the school-to-prison pipeline. And if it's not just the images that we see at home, then it has to be what is happening on these streets. It's got to be somewhere.
I'm very antagonistic. Like I said, I'm an antagonistic person. I think my entire life. So I don't, you know, it's not about educational support. I find education problematic. I always have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Western academics has a purely Western gaze. And
I would wholeheartedly agree. You will get no argument from me.
And that it's very restrictive. And language has always been used against people of color. So I take issue with academic language. You know, I'm from the era of the Black Predator Youth. That was a Princeton article. That was a Princeton paper that was, you know, taken out of context by a president
and his
wife and their administration, and
uh-huh.
you know that
and
that,
used
that changed
to harm
laws.
People.
Used
yeah.
to harm people, and so you know, educational. So I don't think it's educational support because I learned so much growing up outside of school. I learned a lot of different things. Whether I understood, whether they were in the wrong setting and context, I still learned them. And I think that the way our system deals with our youth is far more problematic than the education system itself. There's no such thing as a non-tumultuous teenager. It's the brain. This is how the brain functions. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of what type of buffers and soft landings we are given. And you know, I come from there's no soft landings. Mm-hmm. You hit the concrete.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to figure it out from there. It's not a hand up. So those things are more problematic. You know, everybody doesn't need to sit in a classroom to learn, and really dealing with how people are able to learn. Like I know geniuses. I know geniuses who the only guidance they had was the way that they ate every night. You know, and that needs to change more than to say that we need more educational support, labor market engagement, civic engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So
how does this program
fit into all this?
Yes, like how does that program fit in all this in your mind and in your imagination about how we move people forward, particularly from hyper mass incarceration.
So, and I say this, I said this the other night, about a week ago. Me and Zelda have the same philosophy, just different. We're just different perspectives.
Okay.
Because mine comes from having been incarcerated
mm-hmm.
My entire adult life until the age of 36. Educating those inside gives those inside the tools to fight they were on oppression.
Okay. That's very good.
Education from these universities arms them with accreditation that few things else they do inside will give them.
Yeah.
In my experience, I was one of the first people to go to these new juvenile parole hearings, mm-hmm. For adults who came in as juveniles. And there wasn't much of a reason. The parole board didn't want to parole any of us. That wasn't but I had a 4.05 GPA.
Whoa.
I took 20 classes. I had letters from professors and employment already and family support. It was such a complete packet that there wasn't, they didn't have anything to hang a denial on.
Yeah.
Right. And that experience played a huge part in that. The network that developed out of it very organically played a huge part in my acclimation, mm-hmm. having left. And, you know, and me and Zelda talk about this on a regular basis of how do we institutionalize for others what happened organically for me. College isn't just classes.
Nope.
You know, the network is as important as that degree you get.
And yes. So, I'm glad you said that, because that's what I want to impress upon people.
Yeah.
Because I think the first thought people will always say, particularly around our kids, and I never hear this in other communities, well, you know, college is not for everybody. And they'd use college as this narrow concept, but
yeah.
It really is the relationships and the connections that happen
yeah.
that make college worthwhile, mm-hmm. you know, but people don't get that part. They just think, oh, and so that's why you always have these conversations about vocational and construction and all these kinds of things, because they narrowly define what college is. So that was so, yeah. so profound. You said that.
Well, yeah. And I'm all for everyone finding their path. So mm-hmm. if a trade, I admire the trades.
Me too.
I came
through tech school. I did.
Just so. Like as just like there's so many racial issues around academia and university, there's as, if not more, racial issues around unions and trades that, you know, we come up against. And so
that we are locked out of.
Yeah. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, these are all issues that need to be addressed. I'm all for working with one's hands. I don't think that it negates working with one mind at the same time. For me, this was the best move for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of guys who, you know, this is how their minds work, and they want to have that indulgence, and they want to be able to challenge themselves around these things. At the same time, I want them, whether they see it yet or not, having left prison, I want them to have the network
mm-hmm.
that comes with this in the transition. Like, people say that college education isn't reentry, yet when a student graduates from a university, they're giving reentry services, if you want to use the term. Like, they're giving all types of job fairs and networks
exactly.
and internships. They're returning to society as a different than they did at 18.
Yeah.
As they came in. And so
that's such a good point, James.
And so we look to do the same thing here. We try. It doesn't have to look exactly the same, but it has to have the texture and the functionality that this is what's happening with our students. And so we look to that from the jump. And we've had some pushback from other programs. Like, no, that shouldn't be a focus right now. I'm like, well, that wasn't your focus. It took you some time to figure out. You know, but we want to have that in planning and have those seeds planted now, so that we're able to create the buffer.
Uh-huh.
That the buffer. Like, you know, you come home and everything's on you, regardless of what happens around you. No one sees that. No one sees the mental struggles. No one sees the emotional challenges.
Mm-hmm.
No one sees the lack of support that often presents itself.
It's very isolating.
I mean,
when I came home, it was extremely isolating.
And then, like, if you wind up back, everybody going, oh, you failed.
Yeah.
You failed. You had your shot.
I wasn't coming back, but
but I mean, like I just seen a young man go back
who.
But that's a good point.
He was homeless. He got violated for being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd. That.
Because what was he to do? Break into a house and live there? Like, yeah. What do you do? You know? So Zelda, what do you want? What do you all imagine for this program growing? Now that it's getting some momentum and people are looking at it and thinking, you know, maybe we could replicate this. Because there's a replication conversation going on, right?
So this is, so a few things. You know, the reason why we're here right now rather than in previous years. Right now, the faculty of Yale College are reviewing our program and determining the future of prison education at Yale. This is the semester that we either get the, it's over, this was a nice experiment, but so long, or we get the approval to grow this program and to get it on real ground, real footing. So that's important to me, right? We want, you know, broad support. We want this program to be a real thing at Yale. And mm-hmm. just to go back to kind of what James was saying, you know, we're trying to imagine, you know, like we have to think short term, but we also try to think long term. And what, you know, James was talking about trying to empower, giving people the tools, right, to succeed when they get out through this education. If we can start to think really broadly about some sort of future beyond mass incarceration and prisons and everything, we believe the leaders of that future will be people with first-person experience.
Exactly. The people closest to the...
People closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And, you know, we're trying to invest in them, mm-hmm. right? That's what I'm talking... You know, so my long-term goal is for all of the students that we're working with now to be on the front lines of this, you know, fight when they... If and when they get out, and to be... thinking through that, you know, what we're doing is training leaders,
mm-hmm.
right, to figure out how to fix this problem. We're training the leaders.
Okay.
So that's kind of.
Does that feel right, James? Does that feel like that's what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I hope this isn't too intense. I won't say that. You know, when you look at some of our strongest movements, the college kids, we look at the Panthers, no matter how they're painted in other parts, these are college kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very young. Yeah. MLK was very young. Malcolm X was very young. These people were very young
and had dual educations. You know, yeah. They were educated by life in a way that never left them, which
Huey was a PhD
in his life, set the gaze for how he understood academia. Yeah. And I think that's something that happens, especially in prison. You can't separate the two. The imagination of those incarcerated is extremely broad
mm-hmm.
to think on things because your body is so confined. Those who are engaging in that way, their imaginations are already extremely broad. Their capacity, they're meeting it at the best way they can until they're given more opportunity to fulfill it.
Uh-huh.
And you know. And there are still brilliant minds who I know of personally who will never step foot in a college class, but they support and push everyone who's in it. Like if you win it, do it. And it's a great thing. Until there is no need for it,
mm-hmm.
right?
You know, and that's my ultimate goal. That there's no need for any of it. That this system is dismantled. It doesn't stand. We don't reimagine it. It's gone.
Yeah, I like that.
It's a good goal. And look, this is Yale, right?
Uh-huh.
This is when Yale does something, people watch and people follow. We're doing this here because we know that it'll make an impact.
Yeah,
you know,
because if Yale does it, then Gateway can do it, and UNH can do it. Right?
And
Southern can do it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be.
That's right. That's exactly right. But also, if Yale does it, then Harvard feels the pressure.
Yes,
to do
Harvard
it.
Will do it.
And then you impact, and then you're, and then all the other, you know, and then mm-hmm. everyone in Massachusetts, they, and then it just, it really spins out just because of the leverage and power this university. And so I say Harvard because already Harvard is leveraging what we've been able to do to build their own program like this. And, you know, a lot of it's you know, the Yale part is the tricky part because people say, Yale, my kid can't get, you know, but it's very exciting to have Yale doing this because it shows that it's important.
But don't you think this is what a good liberal arts institution ought to be on the forefront of? Doing cool and interesting things that benefit the community.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we, you know, we do have a lot of support at Yale. You know, I've not met one faculty member or administrator who has said, you
mm-mm,
know,
I don't want to do that. I don't like that. Or why are you doing that here? This is an institution that right. doesn't need that. Or
right. So I feel that we have, you know, we have some good momentum right mm-hmm. now and we're hopeful. But yeah, we do need there's a lot that needs to be negotiated before we feel comfortable and before this program can grow, which it should.
So how far away are you from your degree and what degree are you getting? I mean, I know you're creating a degree. Is it a bachelor's or a master's?
It's a bachelor's.
Okay. Yeah. And so how far away are you from it?
Twelve credits.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're close. Okay. And then what do you? So and then what are you gonna do now? You're gonna apply for Yale after that? And
I don't know.
I'm sorry. What?
He needs a PhD.
He does.
I don't know.
Zelda will guide you. And there's a whole Black PhD project that are helping young sisters and brothers get through the PhD experience.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not.
I'm just saying. Listen. Because you know what it'll do? It'll give you more credibility to do this work.
And
you don't need it.
I mean, that case, I know, you don't, that's the case, listen, I got a PhD. In this work, I got a PhD.
You do. But to float on those waters where, you know, bigger impact can be made. I'm just saying. That's all. It's just a bigger hustle. It's just a bigger hustle. That's all. So I'd like to see that for you. Thanks. Just because the eyes that are looking at you can see themselves. That's all. That's what it is. You know, representation is everything. We have to see ourselves in these spaces. You might inspire me to go back to school. No, you won't, but not this old dog. Oh my God, this was a wonderful conversation. You must come back.
Thank you.
I want to see what happens. I want to stay connected to see and watch this grow.
Let's do it. I would love to come back. We're here. I mean, I, you know, live around the corner.
No, I really want you to come back. And I have some other ideas about how we can have a broader conversation about this because yeah. I think you bring something to this reentry conversation that is vastly missing.
I should say, if any of your listeners want to donate, you can
donate. What's the website? How do they find you?
To donate, it's dwighthall.org, dwighthall.org/YPEI mm-hmm. donate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Zelda Rowland. Thank you, James. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Thank Brian, you. I'm going to play us out. We got music up already? Oh, okay. All right.
Should we sing something?
Okay. Yeah. All right, no, we got what? Depause it? All right. Okay. Then we're out. Okay, this little thing is not working today. So everybody, we are leaving, but I'll be back tomorrow. I don't know who the guest is, what we're going to do, but we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Babs.
You are welcome. You're welcome.